Well, we're listening to the league, and they're advising us on what to do. Trent Brown is not here today. We had to send five of our starting linemen home today. I mean, we don't have Trent today. We don't have any of our linemen today. So how happy am I? I'm not happy. Well, we used other linemen, obviously, and we adjusted practice. We still got a lot of work done, but you got to have linemen to play, and we'll have five on Sunday. We'll be ready to go.
The Las Vegas Raiders, like so many teams, like so much of America, now face a coronavirus outbreak. That's on top of opening an empty $2 billion stadium in a brand new city. And at the helm, through all of it, is head coach John Gruden. Today, we go deep on the character they call Chucky, the TV star with big coach energy, who's back to raise the bar for the team once again. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, October 23rd. This is ESPN Daily. Paul Gutierrez, I have a question for you. Where are you right now?
I am in an RV at an RV park in Las Vegas. I'm borrowing my mom and dad's RV while I'm here covering the now Las Vegas Raiders.
Paul Gutierrez not only covers the Raiders for ESPN, he's written a book about Raiders fandom and followed the team to Vegas.
Kind of living like a Cousin Eddie a little bit.
Paul, I have about 50 follow-up questions about what life in that RV is like, but it does feel like the ability to pick up and react to sudden schedule changes is especially important to covering the Raiders these days, starting with what's happening right now. We are talking on Thursday evening, ahead of this highly anticipated Raiders-Bucks game, and there is a COVID scenario that you've been covering in depth, so what do we know about the game schedule? What do we know about who's playing or who is not playing?
Basically, what has happened is right tackle Trent Brown tested positive for COVID. Now, as part of the protocols here, anybody who's deemed a high-risk contact with him has to self-isolate for at least 5 days plus one, which would be the last point of contact, which was practice on Monday. They were all there. They were all there together. It's the Raiders' entire starting offensive line. Plus, let's just throw safety Jonathan Abram in there as well. So
Man. All
of those guys were just placed on the COVID-19 list. Again, doesn't mean any of them tested positive. I was actually told that none of them tested positive. But as part of the protocols, they have to self-isolate for 5 days. Another source told me that they've been doing virtual preparation in case they can indeed get cleared and play against the Buccaneers. In the meanwhile, it was supposed to be a big Sunday night football game.
Yes.
The league wanted to make sure that that game actually happens. So they bumped the Raiders out of there, moved Seattle and Arizona into that spot. So a game will happen. Well, guess what? If those five guys I just mentioned to you consistently test negative on their COVID test the rest of the week and then again Sunday morning, well, then they'll be cleared to play. But at what time Sunday morning? And oh, yeah, kickoff's at 1 o'clock. So the backstory to all that as well. And I got to catch my breath here when I try to figure this out.
Understandably.
On their 53-man roster, they currently have five backup offensive linemen. That's who's been they've been trotting out there in practice every day. That's who Derek Carr has been had protecting him. That's who Josh Jacobs has been trying to run holes through. Those five guys. Plus, they also have two guys on the practice squad that they could suit up if need be. So as we sit here right now on Thursday, late afternoon, the Raiders starting offensive line is anchored by Andre James. And if you need to know who that is, I got a couple of media guides for you here. You can look him up.
Paul, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe this is the very first case of an entire position group being taken down by COVID. Like, I know that we've had players here and there be put on this list, but in terms of the magnitude of what the Raiders are facing with the offensive line, this feels extreme.
Yeah, and it's part of the protocol, really, because only one guy really has tested positive, but it's out of the abundance of caution, which we've heard a lot of since the pandemic hit, right? You got to self-isolate. You got to make sure you don't test positive or show any symptoms. And even if you don't show any symptoms, still self-isolate because you could be asymptomatic.
Sure.
It's just very bizarre. It's a strange world we're living in. Derek Carr said this week that you know, he's been with this team for 7 years. He's seen a lot of weird things. He said this is the weirdest thing he's ever seen.
And it's worth noting, like, weird is by no means foreign to this organization, even within this context. I mean, I still need help, Paul, disentangling what exactly happened, for instance, with John Gruden, their head coach, who took an approach to coronavirus with the team earlier this year that had me confused, the media confused, and then ultimately John Gruden himself pretty angry at everybody.
Yeah, so beginning of camp, we show up, and as a media member, we have to test every day just to get in. I have 52 tests under my belt, all negative so far, which is a good thing. Mm. John Gruden passes out T-shirts to the media. They're waiting for us as we walk in the media room that say, crush the virus, because that was going to be his mantra. He took issue with the NFL Network reporting that he faked having the virus, but yet that kind of just went away. Then on the home opener on Monday Night Football, when he later would get fined for not wearing his mask properly, he brings it up himself and says that he never faked the virus, that as a matter of fact, he did have it. So he talked about just how it was not fun. It made him feel bad. And this is all before training camp, when he said he went through this and beat it, and that he has the utmost respect for it, and he still wants to crush it and beat it into the ground like it was some sort of opponent.
That is so much to sort through, Paul. Thank you for doing that. I do want to talk to you, though, about the other story going on here before this outbreak, which is the aforementioned John Gruden and his complex relationship with this team. We just got a taste of it, but I want to dive even deeper into it. So if someone out there did not know anything about this man, how would you begin to describe John Gruden?
Basically, what you see is what you get. I mean, and I don't know if that's a negative. I don't know if that's a positive. I just know that that's exactly what it is, because the same guy you saw on TV on Monday Night Football for those 9 seasons is the same guy you talk to when he's up at the podium as a reporter. And the players say the exact same thing, that whenever they get in contact with him, he's kind of a caricature of himself.
Well, we got to be honest about our future. We know what our future is. I'm not promising wins or championships or anything, but I do think our team should promise them extreme effort and passion when they step on the field.
And of course, when he gets angry, that's when Chucky comes out. And and even Derek Carr himself said it last week, that he didn't want to get him upset because he didn't want to see Chucky come out.
So remind me here what the expectations were for this team heading into this season.
I think you're looking at a team that was looking at taking its next step. When you saw how the Raiders played last year, 7-9, okay, that's rebuilding a little bit. But John Gruden was brought back for a number of reasons.
Mm.
But he's back to bring up the expectations, really. They are a team that is on the upswing.
Well, they did just beat Patrick Mahomes and those Chiefs. So I'm wondering, like, what does that win in particular, Paul, tell you about the progress that Gruden has made since coming on in January 2018?
It's the biggest win of John Gruden's tenure since he returned for this second episode, so to speak, of Gruden 2.0.
So I say I'm really proud of our team. We beat a really good football team, obviously. And I just am happy that Derek got a big win as a starting quarterback, and so did our young football team.
Derek Carr had never won there. It was like his personal house of horrors. His great quote after that game was, you know, I've had a lot of sad walks up that ramp after games, but not today. To be able to go in there and dominate the time of possession on the offensive side of ball, that tells you exactly that's how they want to play. Because I'm old enough to remember when John Gruden was the young, up-and-coming, whippersnapper type guy in the late 90s. Now he's the grizzled old vet who likes the old-school smash-mouth football.
So you mentioned Derek Carr, the franchise quarterback in theory of this team. And I ask because when Gruden came in, there were all these questions about how he and Carr, how that relationship was going to work out. How has it evolved over time, Paul?
John was known for being really brutal on his quarterbacks. He and Rich Gannon would have epic shouting matches on the sidelines with some language that would make Andrew Dice Clay blush, make Eddie Murphy cover his ears, make George Carlin look the other way, because that was just who he was. And I may have been dating myself there with those references, but you get it. But with Derek, he's a little bit more of a, and I hate to use the word sensitive, but he's kind of more sensitive sort, highly religious, doesn't curse. So John had to handle him, not necessarily with kid gloves, but with different gloves. And Derek has grown up a little bit too in realizing that he cannot listen to all the outside noise. So even this past January, when Tom Brady was at a UFC fight here in Vegas, and the front page of the local newspaper had a picture of Mark Davis talking to Tom Brady, it offended him to the point where he was tired of being disrespected. And that was his exact quote. So there's a little bit more of an edge to Derek Carr now from the mentality standpoint, but he's in his third season in this same scheme. And that's the first time he's ever played in the same scheme for three consecutive years. So you're expecting bigger jumps. And that's how this marriage has kind of come together.
This guy's a great quarterback. And we're surrounding him with better players. I think Raider fans should really be proud of him. And I know I am.
There's kind of an understanding now that this is what we got. This is the best we have. Let's go out there and make some things happen.
You know, it's worth pointing out, too. I mean, Gruden does have this deeper history with the Raiders. I mean, they accomplished a lot when he was the coach the time before this one. So just give me a sense of how far back John Gruden goes with this franchise.
He is one of, if not the biggest football historians you'd ever imagine. Now, when it comes to the Raiders, he is a huge, huge proponent of what this franchise means. And I know the Raiders have the saying that, you know, there's 31 teams in the NFL and then there's the Raiders. I believe there's some truth to that because it's a very, very unique franchise. It's, you know, since 1963 has been owned and run by one family, Al Davis's family. And since he passed in 2011, his son has done things that his father had not been able to do in terms of getting a stadium for them, for getting John Gruden back in the fold, things like that. So when it comes to Gruden, in his first year, I want to say 2009, when he was doing Monday Night Football, he was getting ready to call a game in San Francisco with the 49ers on Monday Night Football. He brought the bus, the Monday Night crew, over to a sports bar that's a staple of Raider fandom called Ricky's. And it's basically a living museum in there. Guess who else starts showing up? All the alumni, the players, the not necessarily even guys that played with him, guys that were legends in the 60s and the 70s.
All the legends showed up. What does that mean?
Well, it means a lot, obviously. It's just, I got a lot of responsibility here. We got a lot of work to do, but it sure helps when you have support.
He embodies everything that the Raiders are right now, and there's a reason why Mark Davis chased him and did a 7-year, 8-year, 9-year long dance until he could get him to come back.
I mean, Raider fans are so famously passionate and loud and arguably unhinged in the black hole. I mean, that's their reputation, Paul. What did it mean to have this guy, this character, leading the way as they transitioned from Oakland and now to where you are in Nevada?
The cynic in a lot of fans saw John Gruden being hired as, oh, he's coming back to sell tickets, much like the year before in 2017. When the Raiders won the vote to move from Oakland to Las Vegas in the spring of 2017. Right after that, they signed one of Oakland's favorite sons, Marshawn Lynch. Mm. And a lot of people saw that as a marketing ploy or an olive branch because the Raiders were going to be there another 3 years. You know, it's this weird, long, awkward goodbye. But Marshawn Lynch showed he still had something left in the tank, and he loved being an Oakland Raider for his hometown team.
He came back to the Raiders for similar, I think, reasons that I did. I think he loves Oakland.
Gruden coming back, loved coming back to his team because, as he said, he never wanted to leave.
I never thought I'd be back, but here I am and I'm ready to get to work. And I just want to say that there's really four major reasons that I am here coaching today. And number one, I love football. I love the players that play it. I love the preparation. I love the journey. Love football. And I love the city of Oakland.
It was just Mark Davis bringing John Gruden back home, so to speak.
Well, he is this ultimate entertainer. I mean, he was that on television. He was that on every sideline he's ever been on. But there was this funny distinction, this question, Paul, that was being asked in terms of whether pro sports could actually have Las Vegas as like this suitable home. I mean, there was a line being drawn between, okay, that's the place for entertainment and gambling and boxing fights, but actually having sports there, pro sports, I mean, all the distractions, those were things that were bandied about as concerns. So obviously since then, the Golden Knights in the NHL helped prove that teams could succeed and stay out of trouble in Sin City. But how did the NHL pave the way for what the Raiders are doing now?
By utilizing one of the Raiders' Al Davis' original mottos, right? Just win, baby. I mean, they were an expansion franchise. They went straight to the Stanley Cup Finals. They've gone to another Western Conference Final in that time. I did a story a couple months ago with Las Vegas royalty, sports royalty, welcoming the Raiders to town. And it didn't hurt that Stacey Augman is a huge Raider fan. Didn't hurt that J.R. Ryder is a huge Raider fan, and that Reggie Theus is the ultimate hybrid of elite athlete and businessman. And he put it to me perfectly. He said, look, to understand Vegas, you got to be a Vegas type guy. You got to be a Vegas person. You got to understand it. And he looks at it from a business standpoint. It's the ultimate business move, marketing move for the NFL to come to basically untapped territory and to build your base that way. And it's interesting because, like I said, the Vegas community is very transient, very blue collar. But at the same point, they also want to flip a middle finger at the establishment. And what NFL franchise did that better than those old roughneck Raiders?
Coming up, the backstories, plural, on what it means for the 2020 Raiders to face Tom Brady and his Bucks.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Paul, what's it been like for you? I mean, you're from the area. You're sitting in an RV right now. That's how important this team is to the city and to you. What's the whole experience been like?
On a personal level, and I guess a professional level too, it's just so bizarre to watch all these worlds of mine just kind of collide and collapse and coalesce into each other. Because like I said, I mean, you know, growing up, I was a UNLV hoops fan. And then I came to college here. Even back then, if any pro sport was going to make it here, it was going to be the NFL. Nobody does a big event like Las Vegas.
Yep.
And in organized team sports, there's no bigger one-day event than NFL Sunday. So it was a natural, perfect marriage. But as Mark Davis told me throughout that entire process, he was kind of borrowing a line from The Godfather here, but he said, I'm going to make him an offer they can't refuse. And as long as the other owners were able to dip their beaks a little bit, here we are.
So you've talked about the Davis family so much at this point that I do want to establish for the listener, like the character of Mark Davis, because, I mean, you're in an RV. He drives around, allegedly, this minivan. Like, how would you describe the scion of the Davis family, Mark Davis?
He's just a normal guy. He's just a regular guy. And he's got a lot of little quirks and traits. And, you know, the haircut, which he does on purpose, you know, for no other reason other than...
Well, describe the haircut, Paul, for those who are not familiar.
I see, and here's where I can get myself in trouble. For those not familiar, it's the Lloyd Christmas from Dumb and Dumb.
It is.
But he, you know, and I'm not hating on him for it. I mean, that's what he wants to do. That's what
no,
he's going to do.
Absolutely.
You know, and he's upgraded from the minivan to a mini coupe.
Mm.
So he's cruising around Vegas in a mini coupe. To describe him is just, he's just a guy who loves the Raiders, loves his father's legacy, and wants to continue the legacy of the Raiders.
All of which is to say that when Tom Brady and his Tampa Bay Buccaneers come to town for this game that feels like this bizarre, like family reunion slash family feud, there is going to be so much drama. And in terms of the shared history, Paul, it's worth recapping. Like John Gruden's Raiders, they fell to Brady and Belichick in that 2001 AFC divisional round game that is incredibly influential in NFL history. It may have started the Patriots dynasty. It involved the tuck rule. And I guess, could you describe briefly for us, like the tuck rule, what that whole thing was?
It was a fumble. That's what it was.
Blitz. Lost the football. It's on the ground. Covered by the Raiders.
Charles Woodson on the blitz. Tom Brady never sees him coming from the front side. Greg Beekert recovers the fumble.
The question is, did he pull it down? His arm was going forward, but was he throwing a football?
Well, the exact term I can't think of, but if you throw a pass, and as you're faking that pass, if it slipped out of your hand, that would be an incomplete pass.
Reviewing the play, the quarterback's arm was going forward. It is an incomplete pass.
Yeah, it was the play that literally it did. It altered the directions of both franchises. You know, and just on a personal note, I really feel that if that play had been ruled as it probably should have been a fumble, I don't think we know who Tom Brady is today, because I think the Patriots go back to Drew Bledsoe the next year instead of the Patriots winning Super Bowl and becoming the team of the decade and Brady becoming the greatest of all time over Joe Montana potentially. And that's the unique thing about this, too, is that was John Gruden's last game as coach of the Raiders to end his first tenure, because he was shortly thereafter traded to Tampa Bay, which the next year, Tampa Bay blew out the Raiders in the Super Bowl. And I actually do have a story coming out this weekend, just kind of looking, you know, what would the NFL look like today? What would the Raiders in particular look like if that trade had never been made?
But in terms of Gruden, did he ever really get over that?
No.
I think the Tuck rule is a crock of personally. Okay.
Absolutely not. And it's funny because I think within the first 30 seconds of his reintroductory press conference when he came back to the Raiders in January of 18, he said he fumbled that ball.
And I also really like to thank all of the Raider players that are here today. I saw Charles Woodson. Brady fumbled that ball.
That was the first thing he said. And he had Charles Woodson there to back him up, and all the Raider alumni were there. So, no, he's not over it. But again, like we were talking about at a different time, I mean, he's able to compartmentalize things. It sits there and it bubbles just below the surface. It's nothing he's ever going to forget. Hopefully they learn from it and they figure out, you know, make that play happen 20 seconds earlier. That way it's not inside the 2-minute warning and they can't review it.
So it is rare, I mean, to get a trade for a coach in general. But given the conditions and the context that you gave us in terms of how that led to this trade in particular, what has Gruden been saying about how he feels taking on this other former team that he has, the one he had led himself, by the way, to a championship in 2002?
As it stands now, he didn't want to talk about it at all. It was really unusual this week when he was asked about, you know, the trade and going there and how the memories and what does he think about now. Shut it down. All he wants to do is win a game. And shortly thereafter came the news that he had to send his entire starting offensive line home for contact tracing due to a positive test for COVID. John doesn't like to get do these deep dives. He doesn't like to get all philosophical, which is interesting because he doesn't like to do that in group type settings. If you get him one-on-one and he's in a good mood, he'll regale you with tales and it's great. I'll text with him randomly on certain things. And going back to the UNLV connection and when he was coming to Vegas, I mentioned to him on text that, you know, I went to UNLV and I still hated the Hoosiers for beating my Rebels in the 87 Final Four and Steve Alford was the devil and blah, blah, blah. Well, I forgot that John was a ball boy for Bobby Knight in the early 70s. And John said, yeah, we could run with anybody.
Wow. Wait. Given that perspective, what is texting with Gruden like? Is he an emoji guy? Is he like, I just need to know a little bit more about what kind of text stylistically that guy prefers.
He is a big fan of LOL. And I'll just leave it at that. I asked him, we did for the opener of Allegiant Stadium. It was a Monday night game. So obviously ESPN was all in on it. I was asked by some of the pregame crew that were producing that show, could I please ask multiple Star Wars type questions? Because of Mark Davis calling it the Death Star. So I get to John and I go, John, I don't know if you're a Star Wars guy or not, but when Mark Davis is standing over the entire stadium and he addresses you and the team and everybody and he says, welcome to the Death Star, where our opponent's dreams come to die. Did any Star Wars imagery at all pop into your head at that point? He looks at the camera and he says, I don't give a damn about Star Wars. I just want to win games, blah, blah. So it was a great quote. I get killed on social media. I text him immediately thereafter. I go, hey, man, you know I had to ask about the Death Star, right? And he writes back, LOL, I don't think I've even seen that movie, LOL. So, of course, my GIF game's got to be strong, so I send him a GIF of the Death Star blowing up, and that was that conversation for the day.
Oh, God. I mean, every interaction with Gruden is fascinating to me because we saw him interact with human beings on ESPN for years. I mean, he built this reputation, Paul, as an offensive guru on television, and those teaching moments on ESPN in those now famous Gruden quarterback camp videos.
But I challenge you, man, to just take care of yourself and take tremendous pride in availability and durability. You know what I'm saying, Cam?
Yes, sir.
He broke Dan Marino's record. So if he's 6 feet tall and able to throw for 5,500 yards, I'm saying why can't Russell Wilson?
That's a long story, man.
It is
a long
story.
Can I wipe the tears out of my eyes? Don't ever throw the Venus on his Spider 3Y banana.
They were legendary. When he was coaching Tampa Bay, what's interesting there is that his teams were pretty routinely defined by great defenses. So I'm just curious, this Buccaneers team, they also have an excellent defense. They're ranked third in the NFL right now by yardage. How is this matchup going to work, do you think?
Well, if the Raiders don't have their offensive line, I mean, I don't think it's going to work very well for the Raiders, especially, you know, given how good that defense is. It's interesting because it kind of looks like a mere representation of what happened in that Super Bowl, right? I mean, you had an elite offense in the Raiders. That's the team strength against the team strength of the Buccaneers. And the difference in that game was that John Gruden knew the Raiders offense like the back of his hand. So coming into this game, it's different but the same because you got the same type of mentality. You know, the good offense against the good defense, and usually the defense wins out in that. So if the Raiders don't have their offensive line, then I think that's all she wrote.
Up next, more on the Raiders and what it means for pro sports to flourish in Sin City.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Paul, inside of Las Vegas, there is the stuff that the natives do, the locals, and there's the stuff that all the tourists like me do. And it does feel, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong here, that sports, like the arrival of a big stadium, like Allegiant Stadium, which you just toured, like this is something that is not only obviously going to attract tourists, but it's also very much for the actual people from Vegas.
It's a source of pride, definitely, for this city and for this town, and especially Raider fans. I mean, I've got Raider fans I grew up with in Barstow or that I worked with in L.A. or whatever. And whenever they come to town, they stop off by that stadium. And when I took that tour with Mark Davis a couple of weeks ago before the season opener, it was pretty eye-opening. I mean, from one perspective, you know, I covered the Raiders in one way or another since 2005 in the Bay Area. The very first ever NFL game or Raider game I covered on a credential, I was 18 years old, a junior college student in Barstow College in my hometown of Barstow, and I went to an LA Raiders game when they played the Seahawks in the final week of the 88 season. So it's always kind of been around me. And then to be able to walk through the stadium with Mark Davis and him give a personalized tour, it was really mind-blowing because you saw what it meant to the Raiders. I mean, it was a first-class facility that the fans haven't been able to see yet. But everywhere you went, it was silver and black. I mean, it's got everything you could imagine about Vegas. The club areas look like you're sitting in a Vegas lounge, and everything is first class. And then you look around and you see the kitsch of Las Vegas, the cheesiness of Las Vegas that you just love. I'm like, wait, is that Elvis in a Raider jersey in a painting? Is that Marilyn Monroe dressed as a Raiderette? Is that Sammy Davis Jr.? Wait, did Todd Marinovich paint that? Yes, he did. And it's just all these weird, bizarre things that are all over the stadium. And when I'm talking to Mark about it, as he described it to me, he wanted to have the two legacies, one legacy of Las Vegas, the legacy of the Raiders intersecting at Allegiant Stadium. And when you go outside and you look, wow, it's at the corner of Dean Martin Drive and Al Davis Way. And I don't think it gets any more Vegas than that, because lording over the entire thing is the Al Davis torch, which they light before every game. More, you know, it's not real flames, but it's pretty impressive the way they did it. It's 90 feet tall. And when you open up those lanai doors at that side of the stadium, it's just a breathtaking view of the strip. So it's everything you could imagine about the Raiders. It's everything you could imagine about Las Vegas.
So, Paul, assuming some sense of normalcy is restored to this team, I mean, it's a long season, but also a chaotic one. What do you think Las Vegas is going to be like if the Raiders can go as far as John Gruden actually wants them to?
You're talking winning a Super Bowl and hoisting a Lombardi trophy and having a parade down the strip. I mean, that would be insane. With the Raiders, you got fans that are already football fans. And you know, when I was in college here in the early 90s, there were different bars around town that was specific to a team. Oh, you're a Bills fan? Well, then you're going to go to this bar over here. Oh, you're a Steeler fan? That's the Steeler bars here. The Bears are over here. The Raiders are over here. The 49ers. So there's already a built-in football fan base. They don't necessarily have to cultivate a Raider fan base so much as convert. And when you do that by winning. But yeah, I think it would be a party here unlike anything seen since UNLV won the title in 1990. I was not here at that time. I was still in junior college, but I paid attention. And, you know, when that party, that parade started all the way down on Fremont Street, came all the way down the strip and ended at the Thomas and Mack Center, you know, that to me was still the number one moment in Las Vegas sports history. If and when the Raiders win a Super Bowl, it's going to be right there with it.
Paul, I understand that you are a journalist here, so I suggest this with all of that knowledge in mind. But if the Raiders end up ever winning a Super Bowl in Vegas, your RV needs to be in that parade.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. Maybe the Raiders will probably let me put an entry into the parade and drive down it. That would be pretty funny.
Paul Gutierrez, thank you for joining ESPN Daily.
Pablo, thanks for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Garrett Lang, Russell Donalo, Max Brodsky, Jason Costura, and Troy Farkas. I'll talk to you Monday.